Good afternoon. And welcome to the fourth chapter of the 1955 Kailua Study Series. Before we get started, I keep forgetting to do this, so let me take a moment and say thank you. Everyone in this group has contributed in one form or another to this work, whether financially or through service of one form or another. All of you have contributed to this work, and that tells me a lot about your state of consciousness. You have discovered that you can't get something for nothing. You have discovered that you must pour out, and that's a beautiful thing. So much so that it has led you to this classroom, all of us to this classroom, where we are going to come into the consciousness that is behind each of these classes. And that consciousness, we learned last week and the weeks before, is the consciousness that can rest back and let the activity of the Christ perform the mighty miracles. Rest back and let the Christ do its work in its own way and in its own time. That's the consciousness that will show you that your kingdom is no longer of this world, but there is an invisible realm in which you will dwell now. And so to continue, chapter 4 is Cosmic Law and Realized Christ. Now, this is pretty much self-explanatory, so this will probably be a pretty short talk this week. In fact, I'm debating whether or not to take both of these chapters, this one and the one that continues this, and make them one talk. But we'll see. Now, we're all pretty much familiar with the basic concept of as you sow, so shall you reap. But for most of us, that has meant if we sow bad, we'll get bad, and if we sow good, we'll get good. And so we should sow good in order that good will return unto us. But that's not entirely, that's not the entire truth. There's a deeper meaning to this cosmic law, and one that fits in quite well with dying to this world. If you've heard any of my talks for any length of time, you've heard me say repeatedly that we must sooner or later get to the place where there are no people. We must not only die to our own personal sense of self, we must die to a personal sense of self anywhere. And that means even with our spouses, our children, our parents, our grandparents, our nieces and nephews, grandchildren, great-grandchildren, our neighbors, our co-workers, our friends, our enemies. And so this chapter is designed to get you started, take this class and get it started thinking in this direction. And so he talks about the cosmic law as we understand it. And the important thing to know about it is that on page 57 at the top, the punishment comes from the deed within ourself because we set up a friction by setting up a selfhood apart from God. And I underlined that, setting up a selfhood apart from that self, because that is really the only sin there is. There's only one sin in the entire universe. Only one place where we miss the mark. And of course, that one place is everywhere. By setting up a selfhood apart from the one self. And so we are going to learn in this chapter that we have got to come up over all these many concepts of all these selves. It was explained to us in the second chapter of Genesis as Adam named everything that he saw. That is, he formed a concept. There's something that's difficult to understand, a difficult truth to understand. And although I say it, I see that it goes over the heads of most of the people that hear it. And it's worth delving into and meditating on at length. And the difficult truth to see is one that is going to take many weeks, months, maybe even years of meditating and pondering until you come to an inner vision. And that truth is, there is no such thing as this world. There is no such thing as a personal sense of self, or a personal self. You are standing in the middle of the kingdom of heaven here and now. I am standing in the middle of the kingdom of heaven here and now. And so I live and move and have my being in the infinite presence of God, of the one self. Everywhere. Yet I do not see that because I am looking through a glass darkly. Later I shall see face to face, but right now I look through a glass darkly. One time I asked in meditation. I looked with my eyes open and I said, "What is this body? This body I see here, what is it really when not seen through a glass darkly?" And very quickly it came, "I am." Yet I do not see I am when I look out here, and neither do you. And if you do, for heaven's sake, start making some talks so we can find out how you did it. How you attained that full time. No, for the most part, we do not see I am. We see a multitude of selves, things, conditions. And now here's the difficult part to this truth. The multiple things and selves and conditions are not out there. You are standing in the kingdom. The only thing out there is the same thing that's in here, the living presence of God. But, seen through a glass darkly, that is, seen through all of these concepts, concepts of a personal life, many personal lives, multiple personal lives, millions, billions of personal lives. All of those millions and billions of concepts are in the human mind. The mind which makes up the glass darkly. So this chapter, although called Cosmic Law, is going to bring these principles to light. And he asks here, toward the bottom of 57, why does the world, each time that this is offered to it, refute it and refuse it? because it takes from the world the one tater that it wants to hug to itself, me, a selfhood of its own. And then he talks about it's difficult to give up credit for being spiritual or being good or being honest or bright or strong or fair. In other words, it's difficult to give up a personal self, isn't it? A personal sense of self. And then it takes the other tater from us. How can we blame the other fellow for our failure if there is only one self? And so you see, this chapter is really going to be about how to see through a personal sense of self appearing as you or somebody else. On the next page, he says, any blame that I place at the other fellow's feet is hiding away from the truth itself. I have created good in my life, and I have created evil in my life. No one else has done anything that I myself did not empower them to do. I submit to you that if you could see clearly, or let's rephrase that, when we begin to see clearly, which is imminent, we will see there is only one self. That is why we can look and say, you can have no power unless it's given to thee from the Father. Because what we're really saying is that you have no existence other than that which the Father gives you, other than that which the Father is. So he says, every time you see an individual as a human being, now, folks, quite honestly, is that not most of the time? We wonder why we still have problems. It's because we're still seeing everyone, including ourself, as a human being. But he's very specific here, at the bottom of 58. Every time you see an individual as a human being, whether good or bad, you are bearing false witness against your neighbor. And so what are you doing? You're sowing to the flesh, aren't you? Do you understand how sowing to the flesh and sowing and reaping really has nothing to do with doing good or bad? That's kind of a kindergarten view. Here in the third grade, or fourth grade, where we are, sowing to the flesh means seeing anyone after the flesh, seeing a human being. And so if you see anyone as a human being, you've opened the door to both good and evil, because you're seeing a human being that's good. Oh, I like him. He's always so honest. But now, I've just opened the door to being ripped off. Because if he's honest, there's got to be an opposite somewhere waiting for my experience. Oh, I don't like him at all. He steals, he cons, he connives. Well, I've just opened the door, haven't I? Now I'm going to meet somebody with good qualities. Or that which I believe is going to come unto me, and I'm going to meet even more people who steal and con and connive. Even in psychology, they realize that if you have a habit pattern such as, well, let's take someone that always marries an abusive partner. They get rid of that one, travel halfway around the world, and what do they find? That's right, another abusive partner, until they've broken the pattern. So even psychology sees that somewhat. But we're here to break all patterns, the complete pattern, the pattern of a personal sense of self. And when we have done that, when we succeed in doing that, then we will live and move and have our being in the presence of God and see that presence and feel that presence and sow that presence and reap that presence. If any of you are looking upon me as a spiritual something or other, please don't do that. The consciousness that's behind these classes, if I listen well enough, is the consciousness that sometimes speaks through me. It's one consciousness, and it's your consciousness, and I expect it to be speaking through you. And when it does, and it's something quite wonderful, you can find me writing it down. We are all students of the one consciousness. Now, so he says at the bottom, well, you see, we are entertaining concepts of them. One time a bad concept, and one time a good concept, and another time a bad concept, and you are being punished not by them, but by your concept of them. You see that? If you have a concept called good or bad, or honest or dishonest, or young or old, or fat or thin, or diseased or healthy, or wealthy or poor, or limited or affluent, even male or female, then you're going to be punished because you just opened the door to the opposites. You either have the door open to the opposites or you have the door open to oneness. You decide, and it's a conscious decision. And then on the next page, he moves into a new direction, sort of. He said, you do the same thing when you search for God. No one is ever going to find God until they are stripped right down to the very last synonym for God and come to the acknowledgement that anything that I think of God isn't true. No matter how good it is, it isn't true. There is no such thing as a thought about God or a concept of God that is true, because a concept remains a concept. And now we can explain that in this way. Adam gave everything names. Now, Adam symbolizes the human mind. The first Adam symbolizes the human mind, which Paul called a living soul, I think. And the last Adam he called a quickening spirit. And that, of course, is the soul of you, or the spirit of you. So the first Adam is the mind. Actually, the world mind, chattering in the human mind, giving all these things names. But in our meditation and in our periods of silence and in our momentary accidental slipping into the presence, which happens, we come out of that mind and experience spirit. We step out of those concepts and we have a spiritual awareness. But you can never have that spiritual awareness if you are living in these concepts, whether of personal self or whether of God. So we come to a truth study, and we learn the letter of truth backwards and forwards, maybe, if we've studied long enough, and we're able to say, God is omnipresent, omniscient, and omnipotent. And now we get to this class, and as we said before, all of that has to be undone and unlearned. All of that were concepts. So we're at the place now where we have to unlearn all of that. Throw it all out the window, all of it, because those were concepts in the mind. And God cannot fit into the mind. We are at the place where we are ready to come out of the concepts of the walking dead. Step into an awareness of God. Then in that awareness, you will know what God is. It won't be a concept, it'll be an experience. and one that you will not be able to describe. One in which you will not be able to tell the person closest to you in your life what it was like. You might clothe it with some words in an email, but it still won't be the experience. All right, so get it into your inner knowing. The spiritual journey is simply one of coming out of these atom concepts and that mind that has concepts and rising up into the mind which was in Christ Jesus, which does not have concepts. It only has awareness of that which is. Here's another truth that when we first look at it is a little bit shocking. God is neither good nor bad. That's difficult to come to grips with at first because for a long time we learned the concept God is all good. And when we saw an erroneous negative bad appearance, we pushed it out, we denied it, and we affirmed that God was all good and all present. And so in that way we hoped, and sometimes did, we hoped to prove that the good overcame the evil, or replaced it. But here we're coming to a new degree, a new place. Well, we are learning that God is neither one of those concepts. And isn't that strange? Now you've taken my Lord away from me. All these years I had these concepts. You've taken them away. Where have you buried him? Where can I find him? And that's the next question here. How do we arrive at what God is? And the very first step is agreeing nothing that we know about God is true. Nothing that we think of God is true. Not a thing. And he goes into, John said God is love, but what did John mean by love? We don't know. We don't know. That was John's awareness. What is your awareness? What? You haven't had any? Well, it's time to get out of these concepts so you can have awareness. What did Jesus mean when he said God is Father? I don't know. I don't know. What was it like to be a Hebrew back then? What was their concept of father? Was it a protector? Was it a stern this or that? What was it? What did a rabbi mean by father? We don't know. And to believe that we do is a concept. But it's only a concept until you have an awareness. And when you have your own awareness, it will be yours. As he says here, in the years of unfoldment in my experience, one after another of these concepts dropped away. And he was finally left with the infinite invisible. And I made a note here, don't be afraid of this experience where all of this is stripped away from you. If you're having difficulty because that's happening now, that's actually grace. Because something wonderful is coming. Something that will make you so glad you've lost all these concepts. And that's an awareness of the living presence. So he says he finally came up with the term infinite invisible. But that doesn't mean that's the correct term for God. That's the term that he came up with. That's the label that he put on, or the term he put on, the experience or the awareness they had. But he says, with you it will be something else. So don't try to copy his experience and say, oh, there it is. Joe called it infinite invisible. So I'm going to call it infinite invisible and be like a parrot. No, you must have your own experience, your own awareness. I've had mine. I call it the presence. Sometimes I call it, well, a funny thing is when I think of it, or no, let's not put it that way. When I feel it, as I have throughout today, I feel it as a presence, a gentle presence ever with me. It's just lingering here, right within me, and around me, and through me, and I feel it. When I talk to it, I call it Father. I don't know why that is, but that's just the way it's come to me. Sometimes I say Dad or Poppy, but mostly Father. But I feel it as this presence. And really, in my heart of hearts, I know it's the I of my being. Now, that doesn't mean that you're going to feel it as a presence and that that's going to be right for you. You will have your own awareness, your own experience. And that's what this class is about, to lift you out of the mind and into an awareness. Lift you out of this world. You know, this world is only a series of universal concepts in the mind. There is no this world in this world. You're standing in the kingdom. Okay, you're in it, but you have no awareness of it because you're looking through a series of universal concepts. This class is designed by the grace of God, by the grace of Father, to lift us out of the concepts and the mind that has them into an awareness of where we're standing, an actual feeling of it. And what a journey that is. It's a journey taking place within. It's a transcending up over, and you are a part of it, and I am a part of it. And so, this is beautiful here. I love this next part, because I'm making the same discovery, as I suspect you are. When he realized that he didn't know God and had to let all these concepts go in order to experience God, then he turned his attention toward his healing practice and realized, wait a minute. Not only do I not know God, I don't know man. I don't know woman. What are they? What is man? And he realized that he was going to have to do the same thing with man. Father, I don't know what man is. I don't know what your son is, what your offspring is. I've never seen it. I've never felt it. I don't even know my own wife. Oh God, let me be still now and you reveal the truth of being. And that was necessary also to come out of these concepts and into an awareness of the spiritual identity of man. But once he accomplished that, once he had that experience, that made his healing practice so much more easier, because from then on, he could immediately stop whenever a call came and say, wait a minute, not a concept. Now, let me feel that inner spiritual being that is man. And in feeling that, in touching that, that is what appeared. And people said, wow, what a great healer. And he wasn't. He wasn't anything of the kind. He was just still, so that the truth of man and spiritual being could be revealed. So, he came to the realization that he was entertaining a thought, a concept of what he was seeing. And my note in the margin here is pretty much what I've been saying. We must ascend up over the mind, and that means up over all concepts, to have an inner experience of God. And so he learned the healing principle in the realization that whatever God is, the offspring of God is, because there was only one. He realized, see, this was an internal struggle for many years. Now, this is not a 5-minute experience that he had. This was an internal struggle for many years, which resulted in him realizing, wait a minute, whatever God is, God is, whether appearing as an individual whether appearing as the infinite invisible or whether appearing as an individualization of that infinite invisible. And so he came to see that they were one. But he came to see this as an awareness, as an experience, not as a deductive reasoning process. It wasn't thinking about this that brought this to his attention. It was turning within and saying, God, I don't even know what man is. What is man? Through this process and many meditations and having the awareness over and over again and each time expanding on it, having that awareness expand, he came into an actual experience of what man is through revelation within his being in no other way. And this is what he means by realization. So, if you're going to think about all this that we've just talked about, that you've just read, you're going to add more concepts upon concepts upon concepts. So don't do it. Don't do it. There's a story of a Zen master, and I used to read those stories quite a bit. And this one story is about a college professor that decided to seek enlightenment. So he found this master, and he went to his hut, and he said, now, I want you to teach me about enlightenment. Just tell me exactly what is it, sir? And I probably shouldn't, but I envision Zen masters as similar to the masters we saw on the television show Kung Fu. And I can see this professor sitting down and saying, now, tell me what enlightenment is. Please explain it, sir. And the master says to him, of course, of course. But first, let us have some tea. And the professor, impatient, probably drumming his fingers on the table. Anyway, the master sets down two cups, brings over the teapot, and begins to pour in the professor's cup. And up it flows, halfway, three-quarters. Professor's watching this, impatient probably to get to the bottom of this, what enlightenment is. And still it keeps on pouring into the cup, up to the rim, up to the very brim, over the edge, down the cup. And the master, he looks at the master, and the master's smiling and pouring, over the edge, down the cup, across the table. He probably had to jump out of the way before it spilled into his lap, down on the floor. What are you doing? What are you doing? Can't you see the cup is full? Cries the professor. And then the master stops, looks at him and smiles and says, yes, just like this cup, so is your mind full of concepts. First, be emptied of the concepts, then I can teach you of enlightenment. And so there we are. That's us. That's just not a pretty poetic story or a psychological story. That's the truth. That's what has to happen. So on the page 61 here, he says something that's very shocking if you take it seriously. He says he cannot see, hear, taste, touch, or smell God. In other words, the senses and the sense mind, which form these concepts, cannot ever reveal God. And with that, we're all in agreement. Of course, God is an experience, not a thought, not a concept, not an image in the mind. But now we come to man. And here's the shocking thing. Neither can I see, hear, taste, touch, or smell you, nor even myself. And oh my God, if you move into that statement, if you live with that statement day and night, it will haunt you, I guarantee you, because it has me. here's this person I love. Pick anyone. Anyone you know. I have never seen, heard, tasted, touched, or smelled them. The senses cannot reveal them to me. There's someone here I have never met. What the senses have shown me is a mental image, existing only in my mind, not outside of it. Well, then, who is this? Oh, I can use the words, blah, 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 this is God individualized. That doesn't mean anything. Another concept. Who is this? How do I find out who this is? And Joel says, ah, now we come to the wisdom. Now we come to the spiritual revelation, because the only way you can find out who this is to have the inner revelation. Let the truth of them be revealed inside of you in your meditation, the same way you approached knowing God. It's exactly the same. You had to turn within, eliminate every concept you ever had, and say, God, please reveal yourself. And then if you repeated that, eventually something happened. You felt something. You may not have been sure it was real, but you repeated it again. And then the following week again, and then maybe like Joel 2 times in 1 week. And in that way, God revealed itself. Now, what about this person, this relationship, this being that you thought you knew? It is exactly the same. You turn within, you eliminate, throw out every concept you have ever formed, whether of them or if you're doing this about yourself, then of yourself. I mean everything. Every place you went, every place you did, every place you thought, every place you felt, every place you existed, all of it. And then in the quiet that remains, you may ask, Father, reveal this being. What is it? In this way, you will have a direct revelation within you of who this is, or what this is, that you call friend, or enemy, or self. Here he gives you a hint when he says, man is as much a spirit as God, for these are one. And of course that has to be. I've had that in my meditation. Christ said directly, God is a spirit. And you are the sons, the offspring of God. If God is a spirit, you have got to be a spirit. But what does that mean? That's just another concept. Throw it out now. As soon as you got it, throw it out. If it is revealed to you what a spirit means, as an experience, if you experience the spirit that you are, or the spirit that your friend is, or the spirit that your enemy is, then you will know what that means. You see the place we're coming to? I told you in the beginning, everything you've learned is going to be thrown out. And I meant it. You really are going to be in the fire. This is going to be a baptism of the Spirit. All right. So when he says here, I am a law unto my experience, you don't know what that means. Throw it out. Now, down here at the bottom of 61, error number one is a belief in a personal self anywhere. Error number two is if you ascribe a quality, a concept, a characteristic to anyone or anything, you are declaring a selfhood apart from God and setting up your own punishment. I don't know about you, but I've had enough of that. I don't want to sow that anymore. I want to find out what sowing to the Spirit really means. Now he says, this is not easy to do. These concepts are not easily given up. You'll find that when you begin to put this into practice in your own experience, it won't be easy. You'll find it won't be easy either. So know that there's a work ahead of you. Of course, you knew that, didn't you? Now, on the next page, he moves into the ultimate secret of healing work lies in the one word, reaction. And that is because if you buy into the concepts and you react to them, now you've got the mental concept and an emotional reaction, and the two things working in your mind, and they're really enough to hypnotize you. If you do not buy the mental image, and there's no reaction to you, and because you've practiced coming up over these concepts by your work with understanding, or rather having an experience of God, and by your work with trying to have an experience of what man really is, by your work of coming up over those concepts, you will be in the place where you have discovered the secret of healing. Because you will discover you no longer react to the mental images, knowing that they're concepts, you're not fooled. You'll be able to say concept and get still until God reveals what's really there. Now, once you understand that these concepts go together to form what's called this world, but isn't really an external world, it's really a deceptive state of thought, then you will know my kingdom is not of your deceptive state of thought. It's not of your concepts. And you also know there are not two worlds. There is not a this world, which is almost infinite, and a my kingdom, which is infinite. No, there's a my kingdom, which you're standing in. But it won't do you any good to remember that, to walk around saying, I'm standing in the kingdom, I'm standing. No. That will be adding concepts to concepts, and it doesn't work. It doesn't work. We have to go farther, deeper, higher, to an awareness of that kingdom. Then we will understand, simply, there's my kingdom, I'm standing in it, and there's all of these concepts strung together to appear as a world. But it's not out there. It's in here, in this mind. So let me come up over the mind and have the awareness of my kingdom. And there you have the whole thing. And everything we're doing is to repeat that experience over and over and over and over until the kingdom becomes our permanent dwelling place. I wrote at the bottom, greater is he that is in me than he that is in a concept. All right. I also want you to understand here, we have been so conditioned to believe in the belief in good and evil, that we see everything that way. We even approach the spiritual life that way. We think if we can stop doing bad somehow and continue to do good only, that we'll reap good. And it has nothing to do with that. And yet, the mind constantly gravitates back to that, under that law, the belief of good and evil. So, I wrote here, it's not the world belief that bragging is bad. Good and bad has nothing to do with it. See, it's not if you brag on yourself, I'm spiritual, and I want you to know it. You need to bow down to me. That's not a bad thing. Nobody's punishing you because you're being a bad boy or a bad girl. God's not punishing you for that. The law's not punishing you for that. Oh, how dare you take on yourself a spiritual attitude. God spiritual, you're going to be punished. No. Nope. What it is if you think you're spiritual, you have set up a separate self from God. And now you've opened the door to everything that can happen to a separate self of God. You're not being punished because you're bad by doing it. You're being punished because you're stupid. Because you insist on trying to have your cake and eat it too. Alright. So, if you live in concepts, you're under the law of concepts. So now we understand what the law is, don't we? The law is made up of a series of universal beliefs or concepts. And if you live by them, you come under them. You're under the law. Ah, but grace and truth came from Christ Jesus. And so he taught us and is teaching us as we come into this together, the awareness, we can live by grace in a different kingdom. You see how different it is from being good or bad and all that religious stuff? No, it has to do with where are you living. Are you living in the mind of concepts, or have you come out of it into an awareness? All right, on the next page, 64, he mentions that when you come into the awareness of spiritual man, when you come into the awareness of spirit, it doesn't mean that you won't see people on earth that aren't living up to this. It doesn't mean that you'll open your door to Genghis Khan and say, hey buddy, you need a place to stay for the night? No, it doesn't mean you'll be stupid. It means you will see what they are doing, but you will recognize who they are. And so for a while, he says even Christ Jesus barred those who were not of his household. He didn't invite them into his household. And so you won't either. You'll see what they're doing and you'll say, no, they're not ready for this. But at the same time, you'll recognize the truth of who they are. Behind them is what has been revealed to you in your meditation is the truth about them. And in that way, you'll help to lift that up. All right. And here, on the next page, he says, everybody wants the fruit of the Spirit as long as they can have it without the Spirit. And that's true. Nobody wants to die daily, do they, to all these concepts? Heck, this takes work. Goodness, I didn't know there was going to be work involved. On the last page, he says, there never has been a metaphysical healer who could heal a body. Never has been, and never will be. And do we understand why now? Because there is no body. That's a mental concept. Spiritual principles do not, never will, operate in this world. My kingdom is not of this world. I have no demonstration to make in this world because this world is a series of universal concepts. And God doesn't operate in that little box. Never will. Never has. Never will. Healing involves a change of consciousness, stepping out of that little box. And in the silence of the kingdom, coming into a revelation, an awareness of that which is. And we call that healing. So our work is actually a transformation of consciousness. We're coming up over concepts and the mind that has concepts into the mind which was also in Christ Jesus, which knows as an experience, as an awareness, the truth of being. So this was a little bit different way of seeing cosmic law and realized Christ, wasn't it? I honestly thought when I started that it was going to be, oh no, not more of sowing and reaping. I know about that. I'm tired of hearing about that. But when I got into the chapter and I entered into this, I discovered, whoa, he's telling us how to step out of that world mind, a mind filled with concepts, a series of universal beliefs, and how to step into the mind which was also in Christ Jesus. Wow, he's telling us how to come out from under the law and live by grace. Whoa, he's telling us how to have the actual awareness of spirit rather than concepts about God. How to have the actual awareness of individual, infinite individual being rather than a concept of man or woman or child or animal or plant or mineral for that matter. Well, I'm glad this was a shorter talk today. I guess I know I keep mentioning that. It's because in the beginning I thought, well, I can do little 30-minute talks here and this will be pretty easy. And I won't bother people too much and they can just basically read and meditate. But it turns out that it's not working that way. So I guess we better settle into the fact that these are going to be hour talks, not half an hour talks. All right, so we have, I thought maybe we could move into chapter, or the second part of this, cosmic law and Christ realized, but when I took a look at the second part, it was a whole different, topic, a whole different set of principles. So I think we'll wait until next week for that. I didn't hear too much last week. I hope the talk was okay and that your reading and meditations and the group experience proved uplifting to all of you. Thank you again for being a part of this class, for everything you've done to help bring it about. And okay, if you're not in the fire now, you haven't been listening. And if you have been listening, it's okay. A baptism by fire is the one that'll bring you across. All right, thank you, and God's presence be upon you, in you, and through you.